Then she grunted and was sent crashing back down. Naughty May's tails continued to glow. Like Nathan's spell from earlier, this was a continuous spell. He could only imagine how much magic she was burning to cast this. Her gems glowed at the same time. Presumably, she was using her other gem ability, which allowed her to penetrate barriers and magical protections. Nathan couldn't imagine why she bothered. He lacked the ability to actively block ascended magic. Was Naughty May that paranoid about him? Through sheer force of will, he remained standing. His head felt like it was going to explode, and he grew concerned that his bones might shatter. But he needed to stay upright. If he went down, it would become impossible to hit Naughty May with a spell and break her concentration. He couldn't raise his sword, so he summoned a spell in one hand. A moment later, the spell frame shattered with a wail. Naughty May didn't say something or even smirk. Her entire being was focused on this spell. A piercing screech erupted behind Naughty May. A blazing figure charged toward her, unarmed and furious. Naughty May turned, eyes wide. Faye screamed and threw a desperate punch at the fox. Eyes wide, Naughty May stumbled backward. The punch barely missed her, but an ember caught her dress, and she began to burn. Cursing, Naughty May slapped at the fire. Faye reared, preparing for a tackle. "What the fuck are you?" Naughty May screeched, reeling in terror. The pressure on Nathan vanished. Naughty May's hands glowed, triangles appearing over several of her fingers in an instant. As Faye lunged, Naughty May's tails puffed up to an impossible volume. "Faye, don't!" Nathan shouted. He recognized that defensive technique. But Faye had already jumped. Naughty May spun, a high-pitched scream erupting from her mouth. Six voluminous foxtails slammed into Faye. Each of them had been modified with a spell to be rock solid, and Faye was knocked across the room. She slammed into a wall and slumped to the ground. Her flames went out. Azure flames caught onto Naughty May's tails and began to spread rapidly. Foxtails were gigantic balls of condensed magic, perfect for Faye's magic-consuming flames. "Fuck, fuck, fuck," Naughty May said. She waved her tails around, eyes wide. After a few moments of panic, her gems flashed, and the fire disappeared. Silence reigned. Faye broke the silence with a groan and rolled over in the fetal position in the corner. Blood ran down her face. She didn't look badly hurt. Nathan checked and confirmed that she had consumed every ounce of energy in her gem, however. She was effectively out of the fight, and it was a painful fight. In his timeline, Naughty May's two gem abilities had been relatively simple. Her first ability allowed her to empower her spells with the ability to penetrate magical barriers and wards. She could teleport through anti-teleportation wards and considered barriers a problem for lesser sorceresses. Only other ascended magic users posed a danger to her, namely messengers. Hence why she had found Nathan's spatial wards a nuisance. Her other gem ability gave her the ability to counter any spell using the natural elements. It didn't matter what it was, or even if she understood it. If somebody was casting a spell within several hundred meters of her, she could dispel it or stop it from being cast at all. Naughty May still had that ability. That was how she stopped Nathan from casting his spells. But she could also somehow stop gem abilities. Faye's gem ability wasn't sorcery and didn't involve a spell. It also involved ascended magic of some form. Despite that, Naughty May was canceling it out. It took her some level of concentration, but she could do it. What else could Naughty May do now? Better yet, why was her gem ability different? "Seraph, did you know that Naughty May could cancel out gem abilities?" Nathan asked aloud.
"If I did, I would have told you," Seraph replied.
Her face was set in a scowl. As always, she looked none the worse for wear, thanks to her regeneration ability.
Oh, you mean you don't know everything about me? Narime asked.
She smirked. I've never heard of somebody with the ability to cancel gem abilities, Nathan said. Even a tri-gem champion would kill for an ability of that power.
I can assure you that it is an ability of suitable power, Narime said primly.
Nathan narrowed his eyes. That meant it needed to have a weakness. That was always the catch with lower gem abilities. Faye's was obscenely strong, but it burned through her power reserves ridiculously fast. It also struggled to consume very powerful magic, and had a reduced effect on anything non-magical. Sunstorm still put Faye in the dirt 9 times out of 10, because Faye's flames were less effective against a physically focused champion who avoided getting hit too much. But Nathan struggled to see the weakness here. Canceling a gem ability was outrageously powerful. Even when it only worked against sorcery, Narime had been viciously anti-sorcerer. Now she was anti-champion. Narime didn't give him time to ponder her new ability any further. She surrounded herself in another barrier. This time, Faye wasn't available to break through it. Then she began to cast the same force spell from earlier. Like hell he was dealing with another load of this nonsense. Nathan raised an arm in front of himself and desperately thought of a way out. Instinctively, he dove into his binding stone. Time dilated, and he spent countless minutes pondering his problem. Eventually, he formed a plan. There was one type of magic he hadn't tried yet. If the natural elements didn't work, and neither did gem abilities, that left only one option for him. Nathan's arm glowed gold as a pair of squares spun around it. Power from the binding stone flooded his body. A 5th-rank spell would have been smarter here, but he didn't have the time to cast it. At the very least, he had some experience with this type of magic. He had cast countless wards using this branch of ascended magic. Narime's eyes widened and her jaw dropped. She maintained her focus, but stared in amazement at Nathan's spell. Narime's spell was nearly finished when Nathan finished his. His concentration nearly wavered as the image he had in mind was weak. He had several memories to draw on, but the freshest memories were somewhat distracting. Mostly because Kadria was distracting, and she featured in a lot of his recent memories of ascended magic. Right as Narime's spell activated, Nathan cast his spell. He darted over to Faye's side, and Seraph joined him. The entire room stretched out, like some sort of optical illusion. One moment, Narime was meters away. The next, she was dozens. If Nathan looked at the walls, they appeared to be the same length as before. The room hadn't grown physically larger, but the floor had been extended. Nathan had spatially distorted the space between himself and Narime. That meant he was outside the range of her spell. Kadria had performed a similar trick within her mental world once. He had harnessed his image of that magic and cast it. The drain was immense, however. He was burning binding stone power at an obscene rate. Using a 4th-rank spell frame was a terrible mistake. Or maybe using sorcery was the mistake. Was ascended magic even suitable for sorcery? Nathan had no idea what he was even doing right now. Messengers didn't use spell frames for ascended magic, after all. Narime stared at them from afar. After several moments, her hands fell to her sides, and her spell vanished. The blue barrier around her dissipated. Which was fortunate, as Nathan really didn't want to maintain his spatial distortion spell for much longer. How? Narime breathed out when they snapped back in place near her. I got some practice in recently, Nathan said. He had, in fact. Part of him wanted to say that it was all the wards he had created. But he knew the truth. That moment of rage with the twins had been the true epiphany for him. Something had shifted when he fought them off. His mind had clicked with ascended magic when he had used mental magic as a weapon for the first time. And before that, he had cast a personal ward powerful enough to fend them off. He had changed since arriving in this timeline.
Practice, Narime repeated flatly. I've spent centuries working on my spatial manipulation, and I can't distort a room like that.
I'd suggest you become a Bastion, but I suspect you know the truth behind that, Nathan said. She nodded.
I have a question, Seraph said. Why didn't you counter that?
Narime didn't answer. When Nathan smirked, the fox's eyes widened.
You knew? Narime asked. You knew I couldn't counter that.
No, but I suspected it, Nathan said. Or he suspected something. That's how fighting champions works. You need to work out how their gems work, then defeat them. That's the true power of somebody like Seraph. They don't need to defeat you. They just need to survive long enough to let somebody else defeat you. This fight could have gone on for much longer, because both of us could stay in the fight for much longer.
So you don't know how my gem works, Narime said slowly.
She grinned.
That means I can still win.
Of course. But now I at least know you struggle with some ascended magic. You've also never countered Seraph's gem abilities, even though dispelling her regeneration would let you defeat her instantly, Nathan said. The fox glared at him. Her fingers twitched, and her tails hung low behind her. All it would take now is another push, and this fight was over.
And why are you fighting us, anyway? I thought you opposed Tanius, Nathan asked.
And I thought you wanted peace, Narime said.
Her tone lacked heat.
You were at the negotiations. You know Tanius won't settle.
Is that it? Really? Does everything end after you remove Tanius from power? Narime asked.
A pause. Then Nathan sighed. No, because that's not how the world works. Without Tanius, the Federation won't be able to hold itself together. The regents are already squabbling with each other. My aim as a Bastion is to prevent the demons from invading and destroying everything. Tanius is threatening that for now, but after he's gone, the Federation will threaten it.
And then what? The Empire itself? Narime pushed.
No. But if I know somebody or something is a danger, I can't exactly sit back and let it happen, Nathan said.
If you could go back and stop the invasion of Kurai, would you? Would you topple the arrogant old power structures that let it happen?
Seraph stared at Nathan, her mouth slowly opening. Below him, he felt Faye move as well, but Nathan's focus was entirely on the fox in front of him. When he had first met Narime in this timeline, when she had broken into his castle, he had told himself that he would be a failure if he couldn't convince her to join him. That remained true.
That's going well beyond the role of a champion, Narime muttered.
Yes, because champions invade the fortresses of bastions from enemy nations in order to convince them to negotiate.
Has Ariette known anything about what you've been up to recently? Nathan asked. Narime remained silent, refusing to meet his eyes.
You understand what I'm doing, don't you? This isn't about loyalty to our nation or our people. It's about what we want to do. My personal oath as a Bastion isn't about protecting the Empire. It's about protecting the world from invasion, Nathan said. And you've been doing that as a champion. Can you accept going back to being just another champion after this, Narime?
A sharp intake of breath came from Nathan's side, and he glanced over to see Seraph looking at him. When he turned back to Narime, he saw her staring at him with wide eyes.
Are you inviting me to join you, Nathan? Narime asked.
Her voice was faint and tinged with notes of hope.
That's kind of what I've been building up to, yes. You skipped a few paragraphs of the spiel, Nathan said, scratching the back of his head.
Oh, Narime flushed. You can keep going if you want. You were doing rather well. I don't think that's how it works, Seraph said dryly. For one thing, I imagine you just killed all the passion by admitting you're interested. I didn't admit anything, Narime said. We all heard your little squeaky, are you inviting me, O great amazing Nathan? So don't play dumb, Seraph said.
Narime narrowed her eyes.
I will hit you. That won't make my words any less true, Seraph said.
Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose. Okay, let's move on. Narime, are you interested in joining me?
I bet you said something much nicer to Seraph to get her to join, Narime muttered, pouting. He did. It was a big spiel about how I could atone for my sins and how the Watcher Omria would judge me if I turned on him. He even threatened to kill me if I betrayed him. Very impactful, Seraph said.
Narime stared at the other duo gem champion. Then she turned back to Nathan.
Yes, I'm interested in becoming your champion, preferably without the death threats. But that was the best part, Seraph said.
Faye sat up, grumbling. After a few moments, she spotted Narime and squawked. Her finger wavered as she pointed at the fox.
She's here! Nathan!
It's fine. She's with us now. Nathan paused. Almost. I'll claim the binding stone and then transfer her gems to me.
Oh, Faye said.
She pouted.
Does this mean I have to share your bed with her?
Narime flushed, but didn't say anything. Her tails lay almost flat on the ground, and she kept her blue eyes fixed on Nathan. We'll see, Nathan said. He had a feeling the answer would be yes. For now, the binding stone in this room called to him. Chapter 33 Narime apologized to Faye as she applied what little healing magic she had. Foxes couldn't use the natural elements, which included healing magic spells, so Narime improvised. From what little Nathan understood, Narime's healing magic involved directly manipulating the magic within the body. It accelerated regeneration and canceled out curses and magical effects. The downside was that it didn't actively heal wounds or bruises. Given champions already had enhanced regeneration, it was the equivalent of applying a band-aid to Faye.
It's only a few bruises. You will be fine, Seraph said to Faye.
She ruffled the hair of the younger champion. Faye hissed in response.
It feels like a lot more. Every muscle in my body aches. That's the force manipulation. I applied raw downward force across as much of your flesh and bone as possible, Narime explained.
While the three women talked, Nathan approached the binding stone. It continued to glow, completely unaware of their presence. Fias could use the binding stone as a weapon, but Nathan doubted that his counterpart knew how. Using a binding stone remotely was exceptionally difficult. It involved relying entirely on the sensory perception of the binding stone, and a bastion needed to be very careful when modifying anything in a fortress. When Nathan had been new, he had been taught to never alter a fortress's structure unless he was present. There were horror stories of people being crushed when a bastion decided to redecorate while on a trip somewhere else. The bastion failed to check whether a wing of a castle was empty, and every person inside was killed. Even if a bastion did check, it was easy to make a mistake when using magic remotely. Nathan had years of experience, and he was still careful. While he had never killed anybody through such mistakes, he had come too close for comfort a few times. Fias lacked that experience. If he tried to protect his binding stone, who knew what he might do to the fortress? As such, Nathan remained alert. Once he tapped into the binding stone, he could lock Fias out, but death hung above him every second before then.
Then why don't my eyes hurt, or my ears? Faye asked. Wouldn't that be a good idea? Use magic to target the ears or other vulnerable parts? Smaller targets mean smaller chance to hit, Seraph explained. That applies magically and physically. That force spell applies to your whole body, so your muscles hurt. But the smaller parts of your body got off pretty well. which I guess means a very particular part of you hurts a lot.
Faye stuck her tongue out, but she did rub the front of her breastplate.
Right. Now that you say it, it did feel like something was crushing my armor into my body.
If I could easily apply magic to your organs or individual body parts, victory would be simplicity. The bodies of ordinary people are strongly resistant to magical interference, and you're a champion. Only powerful ascended magic can modify somebody's body without their permission,
Narime explained.
Otherwise, the most effective spells would be those that crush hearts and eyes, or that boil somebody's blood.
That would be cool, Faye grinned.
Terrifying, actually, Seraph said, shuddering. Sorcerers can do that. Narime said that we resist magic, not that we're immune. A sorcerer with a large enough can or a binding stone to empower his spells can punch through our natural resistances and turn you inside out. I've seen it.
Faye's grin dropped. Less cool.
Or ascended magic, Narime said. As I witnessed, what I can do is only the tip of the iceberg.
The three of them turned to stare at Nathan, who ran his fingers over the binding stone. He paused and looked back at them.
What? He asked. If I hadn't given up, what would you have done next? Narime asked.
Do you want to know? Nathan asked.
You cast one ascended spell. I want to see more.
I doubt you wanted to see the one I had planned, he muttered. He said aloud, I wasn't sure how you were countering spells, and ascended magic is expensive. I planned to end things with my next spell.
Stop teasing. Out with it, Narime urged.
The tips of her tails jiggled in the air excitedly. A mental attack, Nathan admitted. It would punch through your barrier, and I was certain that you couldn't counter it. At the same time, it wouldn't permanently harm you.
No response.
He grimaced and looked at the three women in front of him. Faye looked confused. No surprises there. But both Seraph and Narime stared at him, eyes wide. They glanced at each other before looking down.
Wouldn't that be a bit much? Seraph asked.
I took a few while fighting the messenger and came out fine, Nathan said. Seraph raised an eyebrow. Then she nodded.
Right. That sort of mental attack. My apologies. I thought you meant something more debilitating.
It was pretty debilitating. I nearly jumped off a wall, Nathan said.
I'm pretty sure I could throw you off a wall and you'd shake it off like a bad cold, Seraph said.
You fought a messenger who used mental attacks? Isn't that what you planned for?
Narime asked.
Pretty much, Seraph said.
She placed her hands on her hips and gave Nathan a sidelong look.
Although she never got close to the fortress, turned me into five people for a moment, and fused Leopold with his breastplate, but otherwise went down easily. One half got filled with holes by Nerevia's crossbow, the other got cut in half.
A well-planned defense, then, Narime said.
Seraph stared at Nathan. Her looks were becoming unsettling now, especially because she hadn't approached him or said anything.
Question, Nathan said. Do you know why Fias doesn't care about this binding stone?
Tonius gave him a new one, Narime said, and I doubt he's been trained to work with binding stones other than the one he's in front of.
Why give him more than one, then?
Nathan muttered. He shook his head. Did Tonius run out of options?
He had options, but would he trust them? Raising a new bastion means new champions, and he can't trust the beastkin right now,
Narime explained.
Terius explained it to me earlier. The regents initially planned to use the beastkin as a defense force if the Federation attacked, but you've sabotaged that attempt.
Good, Nathan said. That saves a lot of beastkin from a miserable fate.
They could have been effective champions, Narime said. The regents don't trust them at all.
For now, sure. But planning for bastions and champions takes place over years and even decades. Nathan looked at her. You've been a champion for centuries. Didn't anything about that plan bother you?
Narime blinked. Her tails curled around her body as she held a hand to her chin.
Within a few moments, she shrugged.
The beastkin would be fodder, but is that any different to normal? It's not like the Federation cared, Narime said.
I'm talking about champions.
He sighed and leaned against the binding stone.
It takes months to acclimate a champion to enhancements. Lots of little steps to ensure that their minds don't resist a champion. It's not as dangerous as a gemming ceremony, but things go wrong. And, of course, would the Federation really send out champions without gems?
Nathan sneered and continued.
The Federation's plan wasn't to pick up a bunch of beastkin they had tucked away for an emergency. They would grab fit beastkin from manors and villages, ram gems into them. Who knows how many would die as a result? Most that survived would become brain-dead puppets, slaves to their bastions.
That's illegal, Narime said. It's heresy.
It's not, actually, Nathan said. The Empire, Falmir, and Trafalm have laws against it because the Empire does, but those aren't connected to the goddess. Not directly. Arcadia has them, but they only apply to elven and fey champions. The Spires apply them to everybody and have made their displeasure known when bastions have escaped consequences for destroying the minds of champions.
They have? Seraph asked.
Why do you think somebody like Nerevia would be wandering around the Empire, ripe to be captured by somebody like my father? Nathan said. She's an assassin, like Sunstorm. The difference is that she does so openly, so that other nations don't ignore the Spires.
Nathan's grim view of the Federation didn't come from a bitter view of Tanius, for once.
It came from the knowledge of how his timeline had turned out. Almost every nation suspended the laws that prevented bastions from enhancing or gemming untrained champions. That resulted in a lot of awful behavior by awful bastions who never went within 1,000 miles of the front line. To some extent, it was necessary to ensure there were enough champions and bastions to fight the demons, but it destroyed the minds and futures of many people. The Spires had fought bitterly against these changes. They despised the idea of bastions controlling champions to such a degree. The Dark Elves had gained their freedom through rebellion, but a champion whose mind had been destroyed through a gemming ceremony could do no such thing. Even after the Spires were overrun by demons, the Dark Elves continued to fight back. Nathan had often found himself on both sides. His hands were slick with the blood of criminal bastions and mindless champions, but also with the blood of assassins trying to kill bastions necessary to defend cities. That was a future Nathan wanted to avoid at all costs. The news that the Federation's plan to employ such a strategy had failed was music to his ears. The conversation moved on to more pleasant topics. Nathan took the opportunity to claim the Binding Stone. It took longer than it did in Fort Tabram, as this one was actively claimed by Fias. Not that Fias had placed any real protections on the Binding Stone. Nathan was amazed at the lack of wards and protections in place. For Nathan, the Binding Stone was the most vulnerable part of his fortress. If somebody reached it, they could do terrible things to him. In some of his old fortresses, he made it unreachable, as he didn't even need to access it. Once finished, he let out a sigh.
Done? Narime asked. I'm amazed how easily you did that. If I hadn't seen you do something 1,000 times more impressive earlier, I'd pick my jaw up off the floor.
Thank you, Nathan said sarcastically. Now it's your turn.
I'm being claimed, am I?
A smile danced on Narime's lips. She sashayed over to him, her tails bouncing from side to side with each movement. Fay glared at Narime. As the cat girl opened her mouth, she was pulled away by Seraph.
Come find us once you're done, Seraph said.
She winked at Nathan. Naughty Mae didn't turn around. Her arm slipped around his shoulders, and she pressed her chest against his. Then she frowned.
That didn't work the way I expected, she said, staring at Nathan's armor.
Her arms worked around his breastplate, searching for the clasps.
I know how to do this.
Her ears tickled his chin as she leaned into him. He took the chance to slide his arms along her body, enjoying the way his fingers sank into her plump ass. Her tail shot upright when he gripped her butt, before wrapping themselves around him.
Aggressive, aren't we? She whispered.
Found those clasps yet? He asked.
Hush, she said.
Her fingers pressed into his back as she searched. While we're alone, I wanted to ask about how you countered gem abilities, Nathan asked. Naughty Mae groaned.
Really? Is this really the time?
We've got a minute or two before I turn you into a mewling mess, Nathan chuckled when she shot him a glare. So how does it work? It seemed pretty inconsistent to me.
I can counter any form of magic that I understand the theory of, Naughty Mae explained. I know the natural elements inside and out, so those are easy to counter. But ascended magic is far harder. And gem abilities come down to whether they use the same principles as any spell I use.
That was it? So if you recognize a gem ability, you can cancel it? Nathan asked.
More or less. Your cat's gem ability has similarities to Foxfire, she said.
Nathan kept that in mind. A few moments later, his breastplate clanged on the floor. Then Naughty Mae pressed her breasts against him, and he felt her flesh press against his, with only a few thin layers of cloth separating them.
Much better, she purred.
Her ears twitched, and she grinned up at him. She pulled him down into a kiss. As her tongue tousled with his, and she purred down his throat, his hands wandered. Soon he found what he wanted. Naughty Mae screamed down his mouth, her eyes shooting open. She pulled away, only to let out a breathless moan, her eyes lidding shut.
Fuck, she moaned.
Nathan's hands ran through her voluminous foxtails. They shuddered at his touch, curling like living balls of fluff. The tips danced with each movement he made. The luxurious silver fur held an amazing softness that nothing in Domar rivaled. With years of practice, he ran both of his hands through the most sensitive parts of the tails. From base to tip, his finger traced a path of maximum pleasure for Naughty Mae, over and over again, as he hand-brushed her fluffy tails. Naughty Mae shivered and shuddered against him. Her nipples pressed against him, and she sometimes bit his shoulder to stifle her voice. Squeaks and moans slipped out every few seconds, and she stared at him with longing in her watery blue eyes. Eventually, he slowed the pace of his stroking, but he never stopped. He'd waited over a year to do this. There was no chance he was going to stop fluffing Naughty Mae's tails this quickly. The decreased intensity allowed Naughty Mae to gather herself. Her hands opened his pants, and his erection popped out. Without looking at it, she stroked it with practiced hands. Moments later, she looked down at it with wide eyes.
Oh, goddess, what is that?
I'm pretty sure you know what it is, Nathan said. She looked at him.
Did you use ascended magic to make your dick bigger?
A long pause. Maybe. Naughty Mae grinned from ear to ear. Then a moan escaped her lips, ruining her image.
It's still silly, she said between moans as he fluffed her tails extra hard. Not so fast. Oh!
Her legs buckled and she collapsed on the ground. Joining her down below, Nathan undressed her. her black panties stuck to her crotch and thighs as he peeled them off, and the smell of arousal permeated the room after he removed them. Naughty Mae slipped into his lap, pressing his rock-hard prick against her belly. Normally, Nathan would have taken the lead here, but the huge tails of a fox limited the number of viable positions. They tended to get in the way, or flap around, during sex, and hit him. Doggy style was a position that technically worked, except for the fact that Naughty Mae's tails repeatedly beat him in the face when she got excited. Anything that required Naughty Mae to be on her back was out, because laying on her tails was uncomfortable for more than a minute or two. She exclusively slept on her belly and side for this reason. So Nathan let Naughty Mae crouch over his crotch and position herself. She knew her body better than anyone, except her tails, over which Nathan claimed perfect knowledge. If she chose the position, then Nathan would happily go along with it. Naughty Mae slipped him inside herself. Her lips pursed as she slid closer and closer to his root, his fingers firmly pressed into her ass. Juices poured down his length and dripped from his balls. Eventually, she hilted him inside of herself. Her tits jiggled as she bucked lightly against his base. When she began to move, he bounced her up and down at the same rhythm. Her moans increased in intensity. Soon she clutched his back as he bounced her up and down on his lap as fast as he could. Her tails flailed around wildly. He felt her climax and clamped down on him. She bit his shoulder again as juices sprayed across his crotch and dripped onto the ground. His movements didn't slow, even as her pitch rose. Moments later, he flooded her. She hissed and pressed herself against him, her breasts crushed against his chest. He raised her off him. White dripped out of her, mixing with her plentiful juices. She moaned. His hands wandered to one of her tails as she lay beside him, leaking all over the floor. Her eyes flitted to him, then to his crotch. Then she closed her mouth over his length and slurped up the mess they'd made. Her fox ears lay flat against her head as she positioned herself over him again.
"Two rounds for a duo gem champion," Naughty Mae gasped out. "Then you're mine."
"You're mine," Nathan said back. He pulled her onto him. He'd missed this so much. Naughty Mae was his again, and without Kadria's help. Maybe it wasn't love yet, but he and Naughty Mae had fallen in love in his timeline. It would happen again. For the time being, he enjoyed the gasps and moans of the fox in his lap. He might have gone for more than two rounds. Chapter 34. Nathan intended to spend as little time in Castle Forselberg as possible. His plan hinged on sweeping southeast and taking Tartus before the regents got cold feet. But there was a binding stone here, and that meant Nathan needed to spend at least a few days ensuring it was secure. For all he knew, Phias was waiting with an army over the hills with a plan to attack the moment Nathan left. Okay, he wasn't. Nathan had scouts and knew that much. But Phias could move quickly, and there were Federation forces nearby. And Castle Forselberg was too close to the borders of both the Spires and Arcadia for Nathan to feel comfortable leaving it unprotected. Unlike Fort Tobram, the Binding Stone here had been active for decades. There were no massive reserves to draw upon. All modifications needed to be done using the normal flow of power. That meant any major changes to the defenses were out of the question. For now. At the very least, Nathan focused on sweeping the fortress for any nasty surprises left behind, fixing the defensive holes he had exploited, and repairing the damage he had made. While Nathan was investigating the upper floors of the keep, he found one such nasty surprise, an awfully familiar black door. Looking around, Nathan confirmed that nobody else was around. The door sat at the end of a hallway. He had sent some knights up here to sweep the floor, and they had reported nothing,
which was to be expected, given nobody could see this door anyway. Briefly, Nathan confirmed that he couldn't sense this door with the binding stone. All he sensed was a stone wall. The door was identical to the one in his office back in Garrick Pass. With a grim face, Nathan opened the door and stepped through the white void that appeared. A moment later, everything turned black. He found himself inside Kadria's mental world once again. A lot had changed since the last time he had set foot here. He regretted not visiting her before marching north, as it meant he didn't have a recent comparison. Had the changes occurred very recently? Or had they happened because of the situation with the twins? Speaking of the twins, the door to their mental world was missing. In its place was a void. The rest of the room appeared significantly larger than before. Before, it had been a somewhat cramped bedroom combined with a kitchenette, with a small bathroom to the side. Now there was practically enough space to dance in the kitchen. The bedroom was its own space, with the kitchen and dining space separated with a line along the ground. Nathan wondered if that line indicated a change in flooring. As he wore shoes, he had no idea what the flooring was now. It had been wooden floorboards before. Was it carpet now? The furnishings were largely unchanged. A massive bed, bookshelves, dining tables and chairs, plenty of cushions, kitchen appliances, and countertops. The main new addition was a long table with a single chair. Kadria sat at this table and was tapping her fingers on a strange metal device with a glowing screen. The device reminded him of the control panels from the future of his timeline. They had been an experimental technology that used magic and crystals to process information and display them using holograms. But this device seemed entirely solid and several orders of magnitude smaller than anything Nathan had seen. What worried Nathan the most about the changes to the room was the sheer amount of color. Because everything had color now, except the walls and floor. When he had first entered, he had thought he entered the wrong room, or that Kadria had somehow entered reality. Then the endless void made it clear he was in the right place. Kadria interrupted his thoughts by closing the metal device in front of her with a thunk. She turned to him and grinned. "Gotta say, it's nice to have this back," she said. "I worried it might be years. Although it's gonna be a while before I can replicate the internet." "What on Domar is an internet?" Nathan asked. "It's fairly complicated to explain. How do I say this?" Kadria trailed off and stared at the void in the ceiling. "It's an invention from the world you came from, isn't it? Like the express that the twins mentioned, and all the other strange things you bring up all the time," Nathan said. Kadria blinked at him. Ignoring her, he strode over to the dining table, pulled out a seat, and flopped down. There was no food or drink, and Kadria didn't summon any after a few seconds. Irritated, Nathan reached for his binding stone. He vainly tried to replicate the magic he had seen and felt Kadria use dozens, if not hundreds, of times before. "Huh, you're actually getting it," Kadria said. Given all that was appearing were either horrific lumps that tasted vaguely like food but didn't look like it, or flavorless lumps that looked and felt perfect, Nathan disagreed. "You've made a crazy amount of progress lately. Then again, I picked you because you clearly had a knack for this stuff," Kadria said. She stared at him for another minute, as he rapidly summoned and destroyed more and more food. "You probably don't want to work out how to control life magic while you're in this mood, however." "This mood?" Nathan growled. He paused. He hadn't meant to say it like that. "The mood that suggests you'll happily push me into the bed and do amazing things to me." "Yes," Kadria said, a grin stretched from ear to ear. "Anger can be a great motivator, but the secret to life magic is the last thing you should discover while furious."
Nathan glared at the lumpy mess on his plate that was supposed to be soft bread rolls. With a wave of his hand, he banished it from existence. "This place, this world," he said, changing the subject. "It's in my head, isn't it? That's why only I can see it, and why I can't detect it with the binding stone."
"Partial credit," Kadria said.
She rose and joined him at the table. A bamboo steamer appeared between them, along with two sets of wooden chopsticks resting on marble chopstick rests. Kadria pulled off the top of the steamer, revealing a large batch of perfectly steamed dumplings. Nathan was somewhat familiar with dumplings, as they were a popular food that had been imported to the mainland from the Kurai Peninsula. Narime knew how to cook some excellent ones from scratch, the rare times somebody could convince her to approach a kitchen.
"If this was in your head, then you wouldn't feel full after eating here," Kadria said.
She ate half of a dumpling, then tried to offer the other half to Nathan.
"I'll eat my own," he said, fumbling with the chopsticks.
She laughed, watching with amusement as Nathan tried to use the chopsticks. Eventually, she took pity on him and summoned a fork for him.
"Guess your fox never taught you that," Kadria asked.
Ignoring her, Nathan picked up a dumpling with his hand. It was hot, but he was effectively fireproof. She stared at him as he popped it in his mouth.
"Most people eat them with their bare hands over here," Nathan said. "Maybe it's different in the Federation."
Kadria scowled at him.
"Barbaric.
How many times have you crawled under the table while I'm eating?"
"That's different."
Nathan rolled his eyes. After a few more dumplings, Kadria got back to the topic at hand.
"Like I said, this place is physical, but you're right that it is in your head, in a way. The door is a physical manifestation of a mental phenomenon that only affects you. Hence, only you can see it or interact with it. It's like your emotions. They exist, but nobody else can feel them."
"You're comparing a door to an emotion?" Nathan asked incredulously.
"Who's the succubus here?"
Kadria gave him an upturned look. Her foot ran over his crotch as if to prove her point.
"You've barely begun to understand the basics of mental magic. I'm something whose entire existence revolves around it. By combining it with spatial magic, we create these physical manifestations of mental worlds. We can manipulate the things people see, or even see things that people hide. Once you're good enough, you can start visualizing people's emotions and thoughts."
Kadria waved a dumpling in the air.
"None of that information overload bullshit. Watching you cast that spatial spell was as painful as it was hilarious. I thought your head was going to explode. I can't imagine wasting time on reality TV when I can watch you."
Something clicked in Nathan's mind. Visualizing emotions and thoughts. "Is that how you knew I was going to detonate the binding stone when we first met?"
"Huh. You really are sharp. The way you overthink things is cute, but I really do prefer the part where you pick out the right answer so fast," Kadria said with wide eyes.
"But yeah, basically, reading minds is a bitch. Attacking people mentally and taking over them is so unreliable because it's so easy to resist. The twins are fairly talented at it, and they still couldn't do anything to you."
"It sounds like you read my mind," Nathan said.
"No, what I saw was that your thoughts went wild, and your emotions went crazy dark."
Kadria placed her hand flat in the air and dove it toward the ground while making a whistling sound, like something crashing to the ground.
"I've seen that before, so I checked for traps. Found the nastiest one I've ever found. First time I've regretted not investing in mental control like the twins, but you probably would have fought that off anyway."
She shrugged.
"It worked out.
You said it wouldn't have hurt you, Nathan said.
I can protect myself from a binding stone going thermonuclear, Kadria said. But if I hadn't seen it coming, I'd be... She clicked her fingers in the air.
Nathan stared at her fingers for a few moments. He munched on a dumpling, then swallowed and leaned back. How do I know you're not lying? He asked.
You're asking that now? Kadria replied.
Her foot pressed into his crotch.
And not before all the other fun we've had?
No, I'm asking now because I'm certain you've been lying to me.
Kadria froze.
After several moments, she tilted her head. Her foot receded from his crotch, and she crossed her arms. Her pupils enlarged, giving her the hellish look she used when she wanted to intimidate him.
Go on, she said, voice flat.
Was she angry? Nathan didn't know or care right now.
You told me before that I didn't understand how time worked. Then you explained that although you can manipulate timelines, it is extremely difficult even for you, Nathan said,
locking eyes with her, even if her increasingly serious gaze was beginning to terrify him. He knew that Kadria could end him in a moment. Sweat formed on his back, but he didn't let any of his concerns show. He refused to let her deceive him any further.
I did, Kadria said.
You mentioned predetermined events. The idea that the world tries to revert to some sort of norm, because certain things should happen, Nathan said. But I'm less sure about that, and if you can pick and choose which timeline you want to be in, doesn't that imply they don't exist?
Kadria rolled her eyes.
Yeah, okay. I think you missed the boat on predetermined events there. I'd explain further, but your little conversation with Ifrit makes me think you're barely coping as is.
Don't patronize me, Nathan snapped.
I'm not. Ifrit was patronizing you, Kadria snapped. I've been the one telling you as much as I can, even though all these things that confuse you, because you're a tiny little man from a tiny little world in an impossibly large cosmos that gives no shits about your personal problems or if everything on this planet drops dead in the next instant.
She glared at him.
Nathan rocked back in his chair.
This was only the second time she'd gotten angry at him. And this time, it felt a tad more personal.
You fucking idiot! I haven't been lying to you! The only thing I haven't been telling you are the things that would melt your brain, because you can't fucking let go, Kadria said. I've even been careful to never lie to you about this. You deceived yourself about it.
The room was deathly silent. Nathan heard every beat of his own heart and the rush of blood through his veins.
What? Nathan asked. Go on, finish your accusation. I've been watching you this entire time. I know exactly what you're about to say, but I want you to be the one to say it.
Kadria waved her hands at Nathan. Almost a minute passed. Nathan glared at her. She glared back. Finally, he said,
This isn't the past. You never sent me back in time.
Yeah, it isn't. Nathan blinked.
Then what is it? Is this some mental construct? Or is it some entirely different world?
Mental construct?
What idiot has the time or energy to keep pathetic humans tied up in some massive illusion? Kadria scoffed.
This is your world, but roughly 15 years in the past, and with a few crucial differences. An alternate timeline. An alternate reality. An alternate world. Messengers call them worlds, because we hop between them like mortals wish they could move between planets.
Why, then? Why the differences? Was it a game to you, to see how long before I'd notice?
Nathan asked, trying to keep his anger in check. If I thought you would have accepted it, I would have told you up front. But you were the one who said it was going back in time. I even told you that you couldn't save your world, although I bet you don't remember that part. Nathan was almost certain that she had told him, but his memory wasn't perfect, and Kadria was pissed, as in so angry at him that he wasn't sure he would leave this room alive. He dropped that particular line of questioning, given he didn't have any evidence to press against her. Fine, let's say you never lied, but you never told me, and those differences nearly got me killed. Nathan pointed at her angrily. Seraph not existing is one thing. Sunstorm and Sen having a sexual relationship is odd. But Nadime's gem ability being entirely different? It becomes difficult to determine what's different because I'm changing the future, and what's different because we're in a different world. Welcome to reality, which is always more complicated than you like, Kadria spat back. She huffed. Maybe I should have admitted it to you when it was becoming clear. But you never visited me after the twins. I did plan to tell you, but you just cut me out. That hurts, you know. We're supposed to be partners. Partners? Nathan almost threw that back in her face, but calmed down in time. Because they were partners, and had been since she had sent him to this new timeline. Kadria had helped him multiple times. She had helped him deal with the twins in her own way. More to the point, her pupils had returned to normal. She glared at the empty bamboo steamer on the table. Nathan couldn't catch her eye. He ran a hand through his hair and sighed. Why are things different? He asked, feeling deflated. Because it's harder finding a suitable world than you think. There's a lot of timelines out there, an infinite amount even. But I needed one where you could slot into the Anfeng Empire. Messengers were present, and it was before the Federation invaded the Empire. Things were going to be different. I didn't exactly spend a lot of time narrowing my search down to worlds that suited Nathan's personal preferences. What if I had only wanted to change the past in Falmir? Nathan began to ask, before looking away. Did he want to know? Same thing, because I needed a world where you could actually change things. Your family and personal situation in Falmir was pretty shit, from what I can infer. Terrible environment to change history, Kadria said. Now do you get it? This wasn't a conspiracy against you. I wasn't laughing at you. This shit is horrendously complicated. I've been doing it for forever and a half, and know things that the twins can only imagine. And some of this stuff still hurts my brain. Will I ever find out about it? Nathan asked. Hopefully not. I mean, do you want me to tell you how many alternate versions of me are out there? Kadria asked with a grin. Nathan grinned back, imagining something in particular. Oh, so you're back in that mood. Kadria's foot ran up his leg and began to harden him up again. I feel I'm owed a bit after this shit. She slipped under the table, and Nathan felt her slip his length out of his pants. But before she did anything, her head poked up above the table. And next time you want to talk about dumb predetermination stuff, or overthink timeline stuff, try asking nicely next time. You've been fairly low maintenance so far, and really impressive in a lot of ways. She pumped his length and grinned at it. And even more so now that the twins have given you an upgrade. He groaned. I'll try to remember. Don't try. Do. I'd rather not jump to an alternate timeline and replace you with an alternate version of yourself, Kadria said. Do you know how annoying that is to do? I'd have to fight myself over you. I basically never die, so there's never spare timelines to borrow you from.
He stared at her. What was she even talking about?
Promise? She asked, pressing him for an answer. Also, that last part was a joke. I already told you that controlling timelines is hard.
I'll come to you if I have any questions about this stuff, he said, waving a hand around. Although, he trailed off, feeling embarrassed.
What? She asked. I mean, this is nice and all, but I really would like a nice reward after this. And it's been ages since I've poured a nice milkshake right down my throat.
Can you undo what the twins did? Or at least make it controllable? He said, pointing at his obscenely huge length.
Kadria laughed. Aw, are some of your girls unable to handle your girth? How adorable.
Fine, I'll ask the twins to do something later, because there's no way I'm losing this permanently, and I don't know how to make it controllable.
She eyed him up. Maybe see if they can add a few inches for my personal preference.
Nathan had joked that she was a size queen, and now he realized she really was. Then again, Kadria never did anything with it that didn't involve her mouth. Her opinion might drastically change in the future. For the time being, Nathan laid back and enjoyed the warm and wet sensation along his length. He tried not to think about anything other than the cute woman in front of him. Not the strange timeline shenanigans that had been explained to him, not the concerning revelations about things being even more complicated than he had thought. And he definitely didn't think about the coming invasion of Tartus and capturing Tawnius.
Can you focus on me for 5 seconds?
Kadria mumbled around his shaft. I can see your thoughts wandering, you idiot. Pull on my horns and distract yourself. Or something, idiot. Chapter 35. A few days later, Nathan left with most of his army for Tartus. He marched along a strict path toward the city. If he strayed too far north, patrols from Phias's other fortress could easily intercept him. Too far south, and he'd bump into the largest river in the Federation, and therefore a large number of river forts. He wasn't exactly threading the needle, but the faster he arrived at Tartus, the better. To his south, Sen led his other army from Fort Tobram. She and Sunstorm had bickered over who was in command. Eventually, Sen had gotten her way by dint of a duel. Nobody saw the duel, which made Nathan suspect that Sunstorm had given in to her close friend. The fact that the two of them were sleeping together probably had something to do with it as well. Sunstorm had a deep soft spot for Sen. Nathan arrived first. Small companies of Federation infantry waved banners from the hills surrounding Tartus, while mounted scouts rode in the distance. Smoke rose into the sky from a massive encampment outside the city, and more tents were visible outside the nearby hilltop fortress. While the Federation might have surrendered Castle Forselberg, it was not giving up Tartus without a fight. His army set up camp a few miles away from the enemy and began erecting earthworks. It would be days before Sen and the others arrived. Defensive positions were vital. Patrols fanned out, ritual circles were constructed, and scouts sent out across the small valley they were in. Tartus was built on top of one of the tributary rivers that joined the nearby Amica River. The center of the Federation was split by the Amica River, which was formed from a large number of south-flowing tributaries from the north. Several tributary rivers from the northern half of the Garrick Mountains formed a major source upstream. The Amica Federation was named after the largest river in its territory because it split up so many of its nations before they formed the Federation. Nearly half the provinces had borders along the Amica River, and even more had borders along tributaries to it. Nathan had mostly avoided it so far. Presumably, Sen's army was held up because she needed to cross it. The river was far too large to ford, which meant she needed to find a bridge. That meant capturing a castle or a town built on top of the river. Rivers were a nuisance during campaigns. Nathan considered himself extremely fortunate that the Federation hadn't defended the Forzel River.
"There's a lot of them," Anna said. "Couldn't they attack and send us running back to the Empire?"
"Numbers don't mean much in a battle between bastions," Seraph said. "That's right. Fierce needs to deal with us himself. If we're forced to attack, he'll have a greater advantage the closer we are to his binding stone,"
Narime added.
They stood around a table in the command tent. Nathan had already made his plans, and therefore had little to contribute. Anna, Seraph, and Narime discussed the current situation while he read a book in the corner. A wisp buzzed around in a glass globe next to him.
"You're certain that Fias controls the binding stone?" Anna asked.
"No. Tanius has other bastions,"
Narime admitted.
"But Fias is his puppet, and even those who are loyal to him, like my former bastion, might not be trustworthy right now."
"But Fias is an idiot, by all accounts," Anna said. "What makes him worth investing in?"
"He's a powerful idiot," Narime said. "He has 3 duo gem champions. That alone makes him one of the most influential bastions in the Federation. The only other bastion loyal to Tanius with as many champions was Ariet, and he has 1 less now."
Anna frowned, then looked over to Nathan. Ignoring her, he reached over and picked up a glass from the table. It held cheap brandy that the soldiers had brought with them. Nasty stuff, but it helped distract him.
"You say that, but doesn't Nathan have 2 duo gems now? And I know he plans to promote Faye at the very least," Anna said. "Plus, Sen's fairly powerful."
"There'll be some possessed in the defenders," Narime said. "Although I doubt any of them will be as powerful as Sen. She's something else. Normally, people become possessed because they lack talent or power. The spirit grants them both, and they can overwhelm sorcerers with decades of experience. But monogem champions are normally more than a match for them."
"That doesn't answer my question."
"The answer is that Nathan is exceptional, although he also has a lot of binding stones now," Seraph said. "Most bastions rely on fewer binding stones for their champions. Fierce had 2, and he maintained 4 duo gems and a mono gem at his peak."
She was referring to the time when she and Sunstorm served Fierce.
"So Nathan could have far more?"
Anna's eyes widened.
"Why doesn't he?"
"Trust, I imagine," Narime said, nodding her head.
Anna looked between the 2 duo gem champions in front of her.
It's rather surreal to hear that being said when both of you defected from the Federation."
Narime's face turned red. "I'm doing the right thing. Nathan is the first bastion I've met who is actively working for something greater."
"He knows more than any other bastion I've even heard of. The things he can do would be legendary if anybody knew about them."
Seraph shrugged.
"In the end, I like being in service to somebody whose dreams for greatness are matched by their ability to achieve that greatness." "A little transparent, aren't you?"
Narime muttered, glaring at Seraph.
"I'll admit I betrayed the Federation, but I have always been a guardian of Kurai, first and foremost. You're just in it for the power."
"No, I'm in it for the ride," Seraph said.
The 2 women stared each other down. Standing across the table from them, Anna ran a hand through her blonde hair in confusion. This wasn't an atmosphere that helped Nathan calm down. He slipped his bookmark into place, snapped the book shut, and drained his brandy. The women jumped at the sound his book made, then watched as he walked out of the tent.
"You scared him away," Narime said.
"Don't sound so disappointed. You can go find him in his tent later," Seraph said.
and then I'll have to fight his possessive cat girl over him. Do you know?
Nathan would never find out what Seraph did or didn't know, as he walked too far away from the command tent to hear its occupants. TARDIS was lit up. Warm light bathed its buildings, and magical lights glowed brilliantly around its mage towers. The city was small by the standards of Western Domar, and it had only a handful of large buildings, but those were enough to make it stand out from the farmland and fields around it. Nathan wandered for a few minutes. Soldiers saluted as he passed, and several Beastkin knights followed him at a distance they probably thought was too far to be easily noticed. Their rapidly wagging tails gave them away in Nathan's peripheral vision. Eventually, he found a small clearing on a hill behind his own tent. Summoning a small ball of light, he lay down on the grass and began to read. His mind wandered as he absorbed knowledge about experiments performed over the past centuries about creating food with magic. While no sorcerer had ever succeeded, most of them had recorded their experiments. The mage towers within major cities maintained extensive experimental records and notes. Some sorcerers collated this information and wrote books on it, saving people like Nathan the effort of going through the records.